All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Harrison Price for Monday, March 11th, 2024, coming to you from the Go Goat Sports Studio, built by Arbor Lee, here at the Iconic Wall Center, downtown Vancouver. And if you're heading to a game or an event in downtown Vancouver, and there are a lot of games in March, make it a staycation. Call the wall, 604-331-1000. Ask for the Sick Harrison Price rate. Some blackout dates may apply. Matt Sick Harrison alongside Blake Price. Grace Sass, hitting switches, conducting things in this show. A presentation of Applewood Auto Group.
And Applewood Nissan in Richmond has a couple of their big brands ready for your taking. Like the 2023 Nissan Qashqais, which are still hanging around, finance them at 2.99% for up to 36 months. Or the Nissan Leaf. Was driving behind a Leaf the other day and thought, that's a smart-looking electric vehicle. Mm. And you can get up to $13,000 cash back during the rebates. It's all good. At Applewood Nissan in Richmond.
Tim Horton's poll question today, we're asking you, have the Canucks leaned on Thatcher Demko too much this season? Yes or no? You can vote at Sick Harrison Price on Twitter and at YouTube. And on YouTube, roll up to win here for Tim's 60th anniversary. You can play on the Tim's app to win prizes. Daily cash jackpot of $10,000 can win the all-electric Volkswagen ID.4 and a sun-soaked Hilton getaway. Download the Tim's app. Roll up is on until March 31st. My answer was yes, just ever so slightly. They were onto a good thing earlier in the season when Casey DeSmith was getting regular starts. Now, his level dipped a little. That meant more Thatcher Demko starts. Now, here we are talking about a knee injury. Looks like a 2 to 3 week injury. Casey DeSmith is going to get his starts now, partner. We were talking about how many more starts for DeSmith. How many more do they have to get Casey DeSmith? Well, he's going to get them now. So I answered yes on the poll ever so slightly. He's the number three goaltender in the league right now with 49 starts. And, you know, look no further than Jake Oettinger and some of the other goalies who have had to play the lion's share and how their level withstands, especially through multiple playoff rounds.
Well, Oettinger in particular is having a very modest year. He's 12th in appearances.
But they've learned their lesson in Dallas, I think.
But that's sort of where I go is sort of, you know, right now for him. I think if you're in Colorado or Nashville with Gorgiev and Saros, I think you've got a little bit better case to say there's too much on that guy. But for Demko, he sort of stands in the middle of the highly used. There's eight goalies who are really used a lot. And he's right in the middle of that pack. So at 49 appearances, it's three more than Bobrovsky, Binnington, and Hellebuck and Sorokin, who are 46. And at eight, are we saying that if you're an eighth like Bobrovsky is for minutes here, like that's more tolerable? Sorry, like at 46? So three more games? Is that what we're quibbling about? Three more games?
In some cases, yes, Blake. That's how fine the margins are now with NHL goalie starts.
And I guess my point is what are the chances that three games over 5 months is the straw that breaks the camel's back? I think it's, you know, when you're getting into handfuls, then I think you can make stronger cases for this. So I'm going to vote no.
Ian Clark said between 58 and 62, if I'm not mistaken, at the beginning of the season. Now, this injury, it is our top story, brought to you by Mr. Lube. This injury, if it does last 2 to 3 weeks, is going to likely mean that Thatcher Demko falls shy of those numbers or falls right on the front end of those numbers.
But even if he was playing, he'd be hard-pressed to get past 62. In fact, I would put large sums of money he doesn't get past 62 if he was healthy. I mean, that's him playing 13 of the next 16?
Yeah.
Whew, I don't know about that.
Except not a lot of back-to-backs, a sort of lighter schedule on some of these weeks.
But if they clinch things late, they're not playing them.
Yep. I would think if they clinch things with several games to go, he probably gets the last one just to make sure that he's
sharp, yeah,
sharp for the postseason. But, you know, could see Casey DeSmith getting the final game, depending on how things go. Of course, got to hold off Edmonton here. And look, two games this week, not till Wednesday against Colorado, then Saturday against the Capitals. It is a busier week the week thereafter with three, but Buffalo, Montreal, Calgary, and, you know, when you started to red circle the Casey DeSmith starts, I think some of the, you know, that week certainly looked like it was going to be a busy.
Well, we weren't thinking goaltending.
And then two games the week thereafter with just L.A. and Dallas. And again, 2 days in between those games before another two-day break and a Sunday affair against
Five Anaheim. Of the next nine games, they've got at least one, in some cases more than one, day off to prepare. And when we red-circled that on Friday and Thursday and Friday of last week, I was thinking more in terms of practice for the skaters. But what's going to be interesting is how important that is for Casey DeSmith's preparation now, maybe working with Ian Clark as well and making sure that DeSmith has everything at his disposal to make sure that he can continue to carry on here for the Vancouver Canucks. So the Demko injury, the DeSmith replacement, our top story brought to you by Mr. Lube, 100% Canadian owned, started in Edmonton by a father and son team, and look at where it's gone. Pioneer of the no appointment oil change, and that's spread to tire service and sales as well, with also no appointments needed. 16 locations in the Lower Mainland. For 1 day, you go to MrLube.com.
Demko left in the second period, 6 minutes, 40 seconds into the second period on Saturday. The reporting on this is that it's a knee injury and 2 to 3 weeks, but it's funny because J-Pat had noted that Demko didn't look 100% right in the morning skate on Saturday, that he appeared in some discomfort. We're also getting listener reports that say he tripped or had to catch himself on his way out to the goal in the second period to start the second period Saturday night at Rogers Arena against the Winnipeg Jets. You may also remember he was feeling sick and had to be pulled from the season opening game against the Edmonton Oilers, where Casey DeSmith featured and did very well. Of course, they had a large cushion in that game, and they had a cushion in this game as well against the Jets, with some calling it amongst the most complete games for the Vancouver Canucks all season. A 5-0 victory. Our old friend Rick Bonus, we typically call him the Happy Haligonian, was anything but in the aftermath. The Jets head coach saying it was the worst game since he had gotten there a couple of years ago. Really harsh on his charges. Did you see the stat that J-Pad had against Mark Scheifele? Winnipeg's number one center absolutely caved in by the defense pair of Quinn Hughes and Philip Roenick and the forward line of Miller, Mikheyev, and Besser. Had just one shot with that forward line on the ice, had just two shots or shot attempts against the Quinn Hughes, Philip Roenick line. Meanwhile, the Canucks players were running it up to the tune of 11 to 19 shot attempts with Scheifele on the ice. So they dominated, and they dominated the top of the Jets lineup on Saturday. Hey, four in a row after sweeping that road trip. If your goaltender is going to get hurt, I suppose this is the spot to do it with the team playing so well and particularly suffocating on the defensive side of things. I mean, Tocchet was praised in the defensive effort through the Carolina road trip.
I was anxious to go see DeSmith's numbers because I thought, shared shutout there after the fabulous outing versus the Anaheim Ducks. I'm going to go check out DeSmith's numbers. He may have remedied all of the hurt from the Minnesota Wild game. Well, he only faced 10 shots because the Canucks are playing so well defensively right now. Poor Casey DeSmith's save percentage is not getting any help. He's played marvelous these last game and a half. He's allowed one goal. He's only faced 28 shots over the 94 minutes of action that he's played over the course of those two games. So that actually hasn't helped his save percentage a whole lot at all. His goals against has certainly taken a big of a boost. And that's the other good news here is that imagine if this injury happens after the Minnesota game, Matt. Imagine the angst over letting, DeSmith take the ball and run with it after the Minnesota game. Well, he's feeling a lot better about his game. I think fans are feeling a lot better about his game, both how he's playing, but also because how the team is playing. This is a much better defensive team over the last week and a half.
More from J-Pat. This on Casey DeSmith, and Jeff went through the game log last year. He did start 8 straight games for the Pittsburgh Penguins and posted a 4-3-1 record. He also had a run of 4 straight starts at one point and then a pair of 3-game runs in Pittsburgh. So he has carried the mail to a lesser degree than a starter, but he has carried the mail in the past. Now,
and that's the good news about what you just talked about with the schedule, is that with the spreading out of games, him playing 4 games in a row, 5 games in a row, takes us all the way to Monday the 25th.
Right. The bad news is that Casey DeSmith had his worst year last year in the National Hockey League. Whilst carrying that mail, a 317 goals against average, which is 36 points worse than his career average, a 905 save percentage, which is 6 points worse than his career save percentage. So he has very much been one of the NHL's best backups. And on the limited small sample that we have in terms of him being a, starting goalie or even a co-starting goalie, the numbers have dipped a little from there.
So you said 8 games last year. Mm-hmm. If Demko's gone for a full 3 weeks, it's 7 games. Mm-hmm. So, that to me, that's probably 6 DeSmith starts and you hand over one to...
That was my next question.
To one of the AHL boys.
Are we going to see Archer's...
Yeah. Yeah, I think you do.
Or is it going to be Tolopilu the way things are going down there?
Yeah, and it could be either. Whoever is the apple of Ian Clark's eye in the moment, I think, probably gets that start. But you got the Montreal Canadiens on the 21st. Montreal's been rather stripped down. Calgary seems to have found its proper level. They were operating on fumes there for the first couple of games after the trades, but they seem to be sagging. So I would say one of those two games in the middle, because that's the one busy-ish stretch, is they play 4 games in 7 nights in the middle of the month. So take one of those middle games out of the mix and give it to one of the AHL boys.
And if you haven't been following, the story in Abbotsford has been quite interesting because Shilovs, who came in as the starter, has played 33 games, winning 15 with the 2.74 goals against and a 9.07 save percentage. Tolopilu has gotten a fair amount of work down there. He's played 24 games, 2.83 goals against. He's won 14
of them. And the save percentage?
9.07.
The same. So do you go with the guy who's got the NHL size, or do you go with the guy who's got the experience and the world championship experience last year for Shilovs?
Well, Tolopilu's a big boy, too.
Oh, no, that's who I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you worried about Shilovs' size?
No. I'm just saying the strapping Tolopilu is certainly tantalizing if he can back it up with good technique as well.
Yeah, and Tolopilo has played professional games, both in the KHL, very small sample there, but then in the second division of Swedish hockey. So needless to say, the National Hockey League would be a big step up for him. And as you may recall, Shelofs did reasonably well in a five-game cameo with the Vancouver Canucks last year, posting 3 wins, a 908 save, and a 2.75 goals against with a really terrible team.
Yeah, if you can
get the other thing we should mention. Like, this team and Rick Tocchet's style of hockey should be able to insulate the goaltender to a much larger degree than what Thatcher Demko and company have experienced over the last several years.
And I'll say that about Shelofs. So he gets thrust into those games last year, comes up with a 908 save percentage and a 3-2 record. I don't think anybody expected what he gave in the World Championships last year. He seems to have a sense of occasion, is my point. Rising to meet challenges. I
would be surprised if it's not Shelofs, put it that way. If in fact you do have to go down to a third goaltender. And look, this is the sort of thing that we've learned. Now, some of it was pandemic related, but it seems the trend in the National Hockey League these days is understand you're probably going to have to go three goaltenders deep during the 82-game regular season grind, and understand you may need to play two goaltenders in the Stanley Cup playoffs, which was almost never a thing in yesteryear, right? It was something that you maybe were forced into via injury, but not something that you chose to do. And yet in the Stanley Cup playoffs, we are seeing head coaches go, I ain't got time to bleed. This guy may have got us there, or this guy may have the better resume, but if he's not playing well in this series, I've got to move on. And that's part and parcel
of scoring's up too.
Talking about for years, and that it's not necessarily the most credentialed goalie that wins in the playoffs. It's the goalie who's hot at the right moment, kind of like the baseball player who finds his groove in October and hits the ball well, regardless of what his career stats or his seasonal stats
maybe. I think the league is more offensive now than it was 10 years ago, and I think the skill level overall in the league is higher than it was 10 years ago. So I think your goalie has a chance of looking human, a better chance of looking human on any given night than maybe they did 10 years ago.
Well, Thatcher Demko has been more than human, the third star of the week from the National Hockey League, or part of the three stars this week from the National Hockey League. It also goes down as a team shutout on Saturday night. Only the third in the history of the Vancouver Canucks. Now, I can remember covering some baseball where from time to time, depending on how the pitchers are used, and remember, starters have to go 5 innings to qualify for the win, where you'd get a starter yanked early because he gives up runs. More recently, it's been because he's reaching his pitch limit or matchups, what have you. And the official scorer gets to award the win. You familiar with that? There are games in baseball where the official scorer looks at the roster of pitchers who played for the winning team and identifies which one he thinks is most deserving of the victory. Grady, goalie guy.
Yes.
If you had to play the role of official scorer and award the shutout on Saturday night, which way are you going?
Demko. I'll stick with that. He was in the net with the game-winning goal when he was present on the ice. Quickly back to the three-man rotation system of goaltenders. Abbotsford has Zach Zochenko in the wings this year. Now, he hasn't dressed in a game, but I was just looking up Ben Lipka and Dave Hall talking. He just recently dressed for the first time this season in a game. So he hasn't played any games. He's got 7 NHL games under his belt. I'm not saying he's going to be the one called up, but there goes to show you that sometimes a guy can be the odd man out, waiting his turn.
He hasn't even played ECHL games this year. He hasn't played at all.
He's getting the Michael DiPietro treatment.
Oh, God.
That's a tough life.
Boy, that is a very tough life.
Yeah, he dressed the other day, which got people upset because they thought that there was that tweaked people because Podkolzin didn't dress and neither did he in that game down in versus the Ontario Reign. So people thought a trade was up, and of course that did not come to pass.
The Vancouver Canucks are now 19-10-3 versus playoff teams. This is the other 15 teams that were sitting on playoff spots as of Sunday in the Western and Eastern Conference. Can we retire the don't play well against the best teams narrative, or is that going to require the Canucks to still win a few more of these marquee games going forward?
Yeah, I mean,
again, the record isn't as good when you narrow it to the top of the top, but over the playoff field, it is, I mean, gosh, over the playoff field, it's, I mean, you're almost winning two out of every three.
But it's a moving target. Vegas was a juggernaut 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't qualify in that stat anymore.
So, well, they qualify in the playoff stat, but not
on
if
the
we
elite
gonna,
stat. No. Yeah. So, like, you know, who are we talking about? I think people want to see them beat the Colorado Avalanche.
I was
that's the only,
that was my next.
Like,
or
that,
does it just mean a win against the Colorado Avalanche?
I think that's it.
And they'll get their chance Wednesday at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, like, honestly, it's perfect timing because they are the last, to me, remaining question mark for the Canucks to look good against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because beating Stars, beating
they
Jets.
They got wins against everybody else.
Everybody else. Mm-hmm. They've proven.
Except for Philly.
Yeah, well, you're not too worried about Philly. They may not even make the playoffs. Heck, they don't even have their coach right now. So more on that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think, and it's too bad that it's not Demko, so you get a truer representation of what's going on. But in some regards, my goodness, imagine DeSmith beats the Avs and looks good doing it. I mean, that would be just an extra feather in the cap here as the Canucks go in search of a 5th-3 win.
And go in search of a 20th victory with Carson Soucy in the lineup.
As long as they have Soucy, it doesn't matter who's in net,
they
right?
just can't lose. This extraordinary run of play with Carson Soucy, now 19-3-2 when the big defenseman is in the lineup. And of those three losses, two of them were in the first two games he played this year against Tampa and Philly way back in October. So in the last 22 games with Carson Soucy, they've lost once, they've lost two beyond regulation, and have 19 victories.
So with him in midseason form, they're 19-1-2. Took a couple of games to shake the rust off coming back from that injury.
And he's aligning on the right side, Blake. And this is something that the coaching staff, Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote, have been hesitant to get to. And frankly, because of the injuries they've had on defense and the timing of the injuries they've had on defense, they haven't had to go down this road often earlier in the season. That said, if they're going to play their best six defensemen in the Stanley Cup playoffs,
somebody's got to be on the right.
It means one of the lefties is overplaying the right side, unless you want to make the case that Noah Juulsen is going to bypass Eric Cole in what's left of the regular season, 16 games. But a right side of Hronek, Myers, and Soucy, or Hronek, Soucy, Myers, and of course the left side featuring Quinn Hughes, Eric Cole, and whoever else.
Zadorov. Yeah.
Right.
Speaking
of, learned a fair bit about him on After Hours.
Oh, he's a character. He's a character, all right. But I think the Canucks fans are looking forward to a day where all six defensemen, the top six defensemen, are in the lineup and would be interested to see. Like, if all six are in, Soucy's over on the right. Who's the third pair right side? Like, they've been, as much as you want to say it's Myers, but they just love giving Myers minutes.
Right.
They just do.
Well, I think it's either Soucy or Myers.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
But
and
who
honestly,
it
may well be who's going.
Yep. Could be.
So, Nikita Zadorov, he's the rare Russian tall poppy in the National Hockey League. Likes to stand out for the suit game, the style game. He said he wasn't a fashion icon. He aspired to be one. He said Austin Matthews was a fashion icon in the National Hockey League. Did you see that? He's asked to comment on the shoe game. Dave Tomlinson is wearing, as he points out, oh, those are Vans. Did you skateboard over here? So he's throwing shade on DT for the sneak. He doesn't like the sneakers with the shoe.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to class it up.
Yeah.
He said he loves Vancouver. His kids are American, incidentally. They were born in the States.
Mm.
He talked about how he wants to retire here in North America after hockey. He talked about speaking out on the war and supporting the Ukrainian people by just saying, hey, he's a straightforward person and felt he should say something. And he's also the dressing room DJ in the room. And when asked what he likes to play, he didn't commit to any specific genre of music. He says he likes to be specific, sort of read the room a little bit. When they were in L.A., he was playing like Dre and Tupac and, you know, music that was consistent with their location. Other times he looks around, figures out the mood, and comes up with the musical selection.
Like a good DJ does.
Yes.
I'm stuck on your a rare Russian top hoppy. There's a lot of Russian characters in the league.
Really?
Kuzmenko, Ovechkin.
Yeah.
Did you see Kuznetsov getting the award from Brindamore in the dressing room the other day?
No.
Yeah, like lots of personality. Yeah.
You know what? You're right. I mean, it all changed with Kovalchuk and Ovechkin to a degree. We were accustomed to Russians barely saying anything, barely.
Yes. The somber, you know, smoldering
getting to
Russian.
Getting to know anything about Russian players for the longest while. I mean, that's still the case with a number of Russians around the league.
I mean, hockey is a rule.
I mean, a drunk Kucherov, he's the tall poppy too, but I think you got to get him drunk first. Give me a break. Patrick Alvin also on After Hours with Scott Oak and Dave Tomlinson, and, you know, reiterated. They wanted to add a player. They weren't able to do that. Further sort of gave us evidence that it was a small pool of guys they were looking at. He had the comment on Friday about quality of players who were out there and mentioned on Saturday that they had identified a couple of players, but it wasn't a long list. And he also said he did not believe so when asked point blank if the Carolina offer for Elias Pettersson was the catalyst to getting a long-term extension done here.
Yeah, I think he wants to shy away from the topic entirely.
We've got him signed. Now, don't speak of Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, the past doesn't matter. It's like what they say to Lindholm right now. You're here with us. The deadline is passed. Let's not speak of prior days.
Speaking of, Rick Tocchet over the weekend sort of implied with his comments that Phil Kessel maybe wasn't all that willing or ready to play AHL games, and that's why he's not signed here as a deadline reinforcement. We had wondered about Kessel, whether this was legit, whether this was the Canucks kind of doing him and his representative a favor. Anyways, that situation didn't work out.
Did you guys hear BX's big tinfoil conspiracy on that?
What's that?
Bringing him in to get a scouting report on the Golden Knights.
Probably not. I mean,
like, he's going to share all the information about the Golden Knights? They're gonna pick his brain. Belichick used to do this. Pick up a guy who used to play for next week's opponent, keep him through the week, get the intel, then cut him the next Monday.
See ya. Thank you.
I mean, I'm sure it helps, but it's not like it's going to be this, like, war chest of information.
Also,
he said it's
because hockey doesn't have scripted plays to the same degree as basketball and football, where, you know, so much of the sport is determined by the spontaneous bounces of a frozen rubber disc.
To poke a hole in the Kessel won't play AHL games, too. Like, he might just have an ego about it and not want to do it, but here's the thing. Let's say he signed on the weekend or on Friday. They're 4 straight games at home. He could be living in Yale Town and playing for the Abbey Canucks for 4 straight games. So it would have been pretty easy for him to get those games under his belt.
Fallout from the deadline and what the Vegas Golden Knights did by using all that LTIR space and making the trade for San Jose's Tomas Hertl at the death. I saw Elliot Friedman report on the weekend that there are some GMs that are grumbling a little bit about this. Of course, nothing can be done in the current CBA, but it's got a couple more years left on it, and that maybe we're moving towards a world where players who are on LTI, on injured reserve at the end of the season, are ineligible to play the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs as a safeguard against bringing back the guy.
I was wondering what you're going to come up with.
Yeah. Well, that look, and Elliot was very clear. Look, this hasn't even reached the proposal stage yet. It's more just guys thinking aloud what can be done if we do believe that teams are not being fully honest, not within the spirit of the CBA, by loading up with players, salaried players, at the deadline with huge salary players on LTIR, and then bringing those LTIR players back for game one. We saw the Roberto Luongo tweet last week with the Kevin Nash gif of getting out of the wheelchair, fake broken leg, and climbing into the wrestling ring. You have to think that the Florida Panthers finished second to Noah Hanifin last week, and that there was some griping and grumbling there because Mark Stone is LTIR'd and everyone suspects that he will be back for the Stanley Cup playoffs, although the injury sounds significant enough. We shall see on that.
Needless to say,
in the here and now, it's allowed Vegas to go out and make trades for Hanifin and Hurdle. Not to mention Anthony Mantha, which is quite a deadline haul.
For those of you screaming at your devices right now, going, they should just keep the cap for the playoffs. They will never do that because they've already had several historic examples that show that had there been a cap in the playoffs, there would be teams going almost halfway roster deep into their American League team. So effectively, a first-place team, you could have a team that was sitting in first place, like the Canucks, that right. suffers devastating injuries in the springtime, that all of a sudden is icing effectively an AHL lineup in the playoffs, which is not what they want to see
happen. No, that's a quality of play, quality of entertainment issue.
Yeah.
I mean, Stanley Cup playoffs get bad enough as we go on.
Right.
I mean, through injury and attrition.
You're starting with a half of an AHL team.
Like, I mean, the first round is usually the best round by way of entertainment, right? Like, come the conference finals, you often have some really sloggy hockey going on. All of this, of course, the season too damn long. Don't need 82. But, of course, the governors need to, satiate their greed. I'm not sure I would agree with the entirety of a full series to be missed, but 2 to 3 games? Because a full series to be missed also gets down to the quality of entertainment, the quality of play.
It does. It does.
So force them to make the decision, can we win a playoff series without so-and-so if they have to miss the first 3 games?
You know what I would do? I'd say 4.
4?
Because that way, you got to win a game.
Got to win one.
You got to win
one. Got to win one to stay alive until you get your horse back.
Yeah.
I just hope they fix it. Like, it's become a little much.
I like it.
And it's particularly become a little much in conjunction with the income tax-free jurisdictions in the league. Florida, Texas, Vegas, and Nevada, which looks like it's already becoming a competitive strategic advantage for those clubs and may well be an even bigger competitive and strategic advantage for those clubs as this cap rises and we're talking about more money.
Yeah.
And more take-home pay in those jurisdictions. Remember, we used to have the Canadian Equalization Fund on the doll. You do wonder whether there's a mechanism in. You're not going to be able to do anything about income tax laws by state.
Governments are not folding
because of the NHL.
No.
So, how do you equalize or how do you mitigate the difference between a guy signing, say, with the Dallas Stars and on the same amount of total money taking home, 10, 15, 20%, whatever the case may be, more than if the guy is playing in a more heavily taxed jurisdiction, for example, BC.
Yeah, well, should there be a slush fund for that?
Well, it's just that's something else that's coming down the pipeline, whether Gary Bettman is going to acknowledge it or not.
That Gustav Forsling signing from, what was it, Friday or wherever it was.
Yeah, it seemed low.
Because of the Florida tax issue. Yeah. Like, if he's if that's another team or if he's on the open market, he's getting
six plus,
6.5.
His agent are asking for more, and so it's effectively become a cap savings for the Florida Panthers, right?
Except that it only, like, again, you can be traded in any moment.
Right.
So
right.
That has to come with a no move clause. If you're gonna grind me to a lower number on the cap because you say there's less tax.
Did he get a no move?
I need to get a no move clause if I'm Gustav Forsling.
Do you give him more in bonus?
No trade protection at all for Forsling.
Okay.
That gets into
but Grady makes a good point. If a huge part of it is upfront and signing bonus, then the taxable income is even smaller because the salary is smaller going forward.
Ask John Tavares how that's going.
John Tavares and Canadian Revenue Agency are in a legal proceeding right now to deal with some of this.
So for the first 5 years of that Forsling contract, his base salary is a mil, and it's five and a half of bonus.
Yeah. So he's getting all his money in Florida where it's safe from tax. And then whatever he's making salary-wise going forward, if he does happen to be traded, well, at least he's not as tax susceptible
if it's one of these bigger
tax jurisdictions. Anyways, something else to take a look at. Our old friend John Tortorella, head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, in Tampa where he won a Stanley Cup in 2004 with the Lightning. They were having their 20-year reunion. Some of the fellas in the luxury suite, Dave Andrechuk in that Lightning blue blazer, some of their other players up there. Torts gets ejected. Torts refuses to leave. And on the YouTube side, that's courtesy of Bally's. He tells the officials he's not leaving, which proves that not only can John Tortorella storm, he can also hold a position. So he's got the two basic requirements.
Look at the guys laughing.
Of an infantryman. Yeah.
They love it.
Captain Greg Bell would approve. He will surge forward. He will also hold a position. He ultimately does leave on his own volition. He has been suspended for 2 games. The Flyers chairman saying whatever the fine is, he will take care of it.
And that's the downside.
And the guys in the box, yes, we're having an absolute kick.
That's the downside of his position, though, is he is so resolute, so steadfast that he is staying on the bench. Only moments later, leaving.
I'm not leaving.
And you're thinking, wow, this is coming to a head, until it doesn't, and he meekly walks off the bench and goes out.
Like, was forfeiture on the table here?
Another
bench penalty? Like, what was the recourse for the officials here if Tortorella wasn't going to leave?
I would guess it's a never-ending run of unsportsmanlike conduct bench penalties, I would guess. So then he just completely sewers his team even further. Now, what point in the game was this? Do you remember? Was it in the third?
It was like 10 minutes gone. They're down 4-0. They're getting walloped.
In the first,
yeah.
See, I don't think he would want that because then he risks... If he puts like a major for unsportsmanlike conduct on the board, like then
they lost it.
You become the reason though that they lose like 9-0. Like I don't think anybody wants that.
Well, what did they wind up losing? Was it 7-2? Did I
7-0?
7-0.
Got spanked.
I mean, it already got there.
Well, and part and parcel, knowing towards. Was that effectively like him calling a timeout and screaming at them? Like, we probably have no chance to win this game, but if I cause a big scene here, maybe I get my players' attention and maybe they play a little harder when we have a snowball's chance of digging out of a 4-0 deficit.
I don't know, but you sort of make it sound like it's not their fault. Like, chances are at 4-0, your team probably has not played very well.
Probably not, no.
And then you kind of... refusing to leave. It makes it sound like you're absolving them, that it's the ref's fault that they're down 4-0. Which, well, maybe.
Oh, I mean,
maybe he believes.
I guess
that.
It could be interpreted that way. It's sometimes hard to interpret coaches and what they do. Although I must say, Torts tended to be a little more straightforward than your average.
It was two power play goals as part of that 4-0 lead, so maybe that was some of the issue.
Anyways, the lesson here is, if you're an assistant coach on John Tortorella's bench,
Brad Shaw,
be prepared to get the big whistle.
Former Canucks assistant. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Saw Mike Sullivan here in Vancouver when he got suspended for storming the Flames room, and now Brad Shaw.
But it's also a lesson keep John Tortorella in this league.
Yes.
However, make sure he's not on my team. Like, whoever the fan is that's speaking that,
right,
is thinking, I want him in the league, just not my team, please.
And funny enough, the guy that he called out in that presser was the one that broke the 2-game suspension news. So, funny little
Anthony DeMarco?
DeMarco, yeah. I'm sure he loved reporting that one.
Although, you know, Torts has got the most out of Philly this year, too, right? He still does have the ability to coach to some degree.
An extraordinary job. Now, and I'll give Saravelli credit there in Philly, because he told us at the beginning of the year, guys, watch, Philadelphia is going to be competitive, because this is exactly the sort of team that John Tortorella wants to coach. A team that has no expectations on it, in fact, has many doubters telling them, no, you can't. That way he can go in and say, guys, we have to have
full buy-in.
A full buy-in effort to defensive detailed hockey, do the utmost to protect our goaltender, counterattack, take our chances when they present themselves, not otherwise, and we'll win our fair share of hockey games. Blake, they have 192 goals on the season. That is far and away the fewest amongst playoff teams in the East, with the exception of the Islanders sitting on the final playoff
spot. Who are breathing down their necks now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Who are in a playoff spot.
They're minus two goal differential on the season, and yet are 33-24-8 for 74 points, clinging to that third spot in the Metropolitan Division. But, and of course, would then fall to a wild card where they would be in a dogfight with the Red Wings and maybe even the Capitals.
The Islanders. The final spot. And the Red Wings have games in hand on the Flyers that if they win them, the Flyers drop down. The
Islanders won six in a row. Detroit's lost five in a row. And Yzerman did very little.
Yeah.
Trade deadline.
But still, they've lost five in a row. If they win their next game, they're tied with the Flyers.
Congratulations to Vancouver's Dante Fabbro. He has got a new contract with the Nashville Predators, a one-year $2.5 million deal for next season. So Dante won't be coming home, at least we wouldn't suspect so.
Mm-hmm.
We say that because Dante's family, the Fabbros, buy up like hundreds of tickets each and every time the Nashville Predators and Dante are here. Barry Trotz has done some interesting deadline deal. They have re-signed a lot of their role players there in Nashville. He gave a 2-year deal to Mark Jankowski, Blake. And I was like, 2 years for a fourth-line centerman. And we all remember Jankowski was kind of a project first-round pick of the Calgary Flames once upon a time. Took a big swing on a big centerman going, this guy hits. Well, he's turned out to be nothing better than a fourth liner. The Nashville Predators carry him through the season. Blake, I had to double check. He had like 2 goals and 4 points. They give him a 2-year deal. He goes out. He has games with back-to-back assists and then a 2-point game yesterday. So there you go. You re-sign your role players and you get the role player bounce. Oh, my God, I can't believe I got a 2-year deal. I'm going to finally score some this year.
So they were paying him for future contributions rather than past contributions.
Yeah, and it works.
Yeah.
Well done, Barry Trotz in the Nashville Predators. We'll see if Fabbro goes on a tear here.
Potential first-round matchup against the Canucks.
Exactly. You don't want this smoke. You don't wish for this smoke.
You don't want this Jankowski smoke.
Well, but here's the thing. If not for the pulled goaltend, and we'll get to this story in hashtags against the Minnesota Wild, the Nashville Predators, they're 8-0-2 in their last 10, had the 8-game winning streak going on, have vaulted not only back into the playoff race, but into the first wild card at 78 points. Well done, Nashville Predators.
I believe Mark Jankowski was a John Wise project.
Yeah, he was. If I'm not mistaken. Definitely was.
Yeah.
But how many?
He might be the best John Wise broad project ever, in fact. So,
well, there have been a few players over our history of chronicling drafts together, partner, where we've been like, okay, in the first round. He was one of them, 21st overall in 2012. And yeah, Blake, until he had this run of the last 3 games, he was on 2 goals for the season.
Well, a few,
2 goals
not
in
a lot
16
of games.
Games.
Yeah, not a lot of games.
And that was up to 6 points in 16 games.
This is amongst his better paces of the last 6 years, though.
He was 12 points in 50 games last year.
Yeah.
And with that, we have reached our Mark Jankowski quota for the day.
Apologies. Indeed.
Yeah. Let's tell you about our friends at Park Casino, the official casino resort of the Vancouver Canucks. And we're going to be live on a location there on Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. doing a show in advance of the game against the Colorado Avalanche. Come on down and say hello. We're going to do some prizes on site. Receive 15% off the game day menu at BC Kitchen, where we'll be located with your game day ticket. Park is just steps away from Rogers Arena. You'll get to Puck Drop. And sign up for the Encore Rewards. You get $10 free play to use in the Canucks Gaming Corner. Looking forward to making it to Park on Wednesday. That's Wednesday, March 13th.
I think we can call it a pregame show because it's right before the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's use that word.
7:30 start.
7:30 start, incidentally, on Wednesday. Yes, there are a couple of these 7:30 starts. Well, we've seen a couple of 7:30 starts already, and we got another one. We got another one on Wednesday. Did you know?
You're going to be able to stay awake for that? I know you've been falling asleep pretty early these days.
I think I got through the Oscars, and that was that last night.
Oh, good for you.
Didn't even watch it. Didn't even know it was on.
You should check it
Gosling
out.
Gosling stole the show,
he did.
Grady.
He did. The Canadian
don't
boy.
Don't care. Mm-hmm. Did you cared enough to comment, though.
Did you know the game against the Kings later this month? Monday is at 6 p.m.? Is a 6 p.m. start?
Oh. Time?
And did you know they've got a matinee against the Anaheim Ducks on the 31st of this month? It's a 12:30 start.
This has been the matinee season for the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, the two Monday holiday matinees they've played in the U.S.
They played an entire weekend of matinees, Saturday,
that's
Sunday,
right.
Double day.
Yeah, so. Detroit, Washington.
Detroit and Washington.
It's been weird.
So, good reminder. Don't assume they're all 7 p.m. starts.
Yeah, it's true.
Going forward. It's been a different year in that regard. All right.
We also got a 12:30 Sunday against the Ducks at home.
Is he listening? We talked about that.
Did we?
Yeah. He just literally did.
I literally just mentioned that.
Also, they had a lot of matinees this season.
Let's get to today's menu. It is brought to you by Greta, 50 West Cordova. Fantastic spot, pre-game, post-game, during the game. They got the incredible arcade going on there. You're going to want to participate. Check them on out, 50 West Cordova or GretaBar.com. On the podcast side, we got a welcome mat coming up here. Patrick Johnston of the Province and Post Media. We missed Patrick last week. He was busy co-hosting Canucks Conversation with David Quadrelli, as well as doing his writing for the Province. Had a story on Tucker Pullman's contract being a complication for the Canucks going forward. Also get into all the different topics with Patrick, whether that's the trade deadline, whether that's Thatcher Demko's injury, Casey DeSmith, Carson Soucy, Ilya Mikheyev. I believe Mark Friedman is discussed. We got a Mark Friedman. Well, because Friedman may have to play here, right? Because of not getting the depth defenseman. We'll do some hashtags, the best and worst of Twitter, including Arizona Coyotes not paying their bills. And I don't mean the team. Plus, the Whitecaps were in action this week. They got a victory, and a good victory at that. We'll get into that. Russell Wilson to the Steelers. The BC Lions losing a legendary head coach. And more as the NFL free agency season is upon us. Happy Hour brought to you by Yellow Dog Brewing, Neighborhood Brewing, Yellow Dog Spirits, Foolish Winery. Thursday, March 14th, Neighborhood Brewing releasing their second mix pack, Best Friends Pack, consisting of Mikey's Original, Johnny's Premium Pale Ale, Jesse Amber Lager, and Mel's New Zealand Pilsner. It's a mix pack that can be shared and enjoyed by all who are special to you. And at the end of a busy workday, treat yourself to a Yellow Dog, Neighborhood, or Foolish Wine. Let's get into it. I don't know if it was malicious. Probably not. But I do know it was another WTF moment. My question to ownership would be, was it worth it? And the architect, and I use that term loosely, given there wasn't much architecture, more finger painting with this team. It's like the running of the Bulls in Pamplona. You know someone is going to get hurt. That's what you all need to understand here. Right now. Our friend Patrick Johnston wrote a piece for the Province Friday blaming it on Tucker Pullman's contract. And yes, minus that poison pill from the Jim Benning era, the Vancouver Canucks salary cap predicament would be better. But there's another guy screwing up their cap, and this one is of their own doing. Ilya Mikheyev, Jim Rutherford, and Patrick Ovechkin. They had to have Ilya Mikheyev, right? Despite needing defensemen and centermen more urgently, their first free agent foray was the Russian winger for 4 years at $4.75 million per season back in July 2022. And so on Friday at the NHL trade deadline, the Canucks were capped out and missed out. Couldn't get that top six winger they coveted. Couldn't get that right side defenseman. Heck, didn't even add depth players. The good news is that Mikheyev has looked better over the last week, as well he should, playing with JT Miller and Brock Besser. And I actually quite like the makings of that line. That was one line I thought could open the season. Besser requires a defensive presence on his opposite flank. Heck, JT can stand for some defensive help at times too. And preferably a guy with speed. Now, Mikheyev's ACL injury of last season has robbed him of that electric speed that was his calling card. But let's remember here, the surgery was to his knee, not to his hands. Now, I don't doubt that the knee explains somewhat of the sagging production. Still, no goals in 34 games after netting 10 in his first 28. Has us rightfully wondering, how much can he contribute in the playoffs? Especially since he's now played 62 games. That is 8 more than his previous career high. Still with 16 regular season games left before the postseason. The $4.75 million in cap space, well, that could be better deployed. And Mikheyev's slump prevented Canucks management from doing more at the deadline, including trading him out for a better winger. I hear Pullman's contract. I also hear Oliver Ekman-Larsson's buyout as cap culprits. But let's not forget Mikheyev. And minus those deadline additions, pressure's on for him to live up to that deal. Welcome back for today. Invite your feedback. Feedback channels as follows on email, live@sakarisonprice.com. Can text 778-402-9680. The Great Clips text message inbox on Twitter at Matt Sakaris, at Sakarison Price.
Also, Ray Ferraro rule. Just because you've scored 20 goals,
yes,
doesn't mean you are a 20-goal scorer. Of course, in those abbreviated two seasons that you spoke of, because he's had trouble staying healthy, seasons of 7 and 8 goals respectively, not too far off what we're seeing from the season that he's on right now. Maybe this is Ilya Mikheyev, who, even going back to the KHL days, Matt, scored 20 goals once.
Yeah. Well, he's not getting there this year. He's only halfway there. But maybe just get one breakout of the near mid-season.
To be fair, he wasn't even putting himself in the positions to get chances in the first 20 games of that slump. It's starting to come. It's time for that blind squirrel.
He's got to get one in the next 7 games. Otherwise, it's officially a half season without a goal.
No one wants that. No matter what you're buying, folks, when you're out in the world looking for this, that, and the other, I think you want to support businesses that you feel good about supporting. You can feel good about supporting the Applewood Auto Group. They've made the car business and communities around them a whole lot better with their work in the community. Go and find out why it is indeed all good at Applewood. Visit them online anytime at applewood.ca.
Patrick Johnson is quite cross with me, Blake. We were pushing his hit all last week until we got to Friday, the day about nothing, the show about nothing. I said, don't worry, you're on Canucks Conversation. We'll catch up with you Monday. So this hit has been a long time in the making. He joins us now, the beat writer from
I'm sure he missed us.
And Post Media. Well, even worse, I pushed his previous hit into March, which means he's got to wait another 30 days to invoice it. So he's some upset with me, and he's got good reason to.
Yeah. As I said before, Matt, you only did this to yourself. The invoice part, you only did this to yourself.
I apologize. Thank you for being so flexible.
We wanted more things to talk about. And by giving you the weekend,
exactly.
Demko's injury gave us more stuff to talk about.
There's nothing to talk about Friday, as you can attest by sitting in with Quadrelli on Canucks Conversation. But let's just start there. Were you surprised they weren't able to get anything done?
I had thought they would add like a defenseman. And then when I saw Chad Ruedel become a New York Ranger, I'm like, all right, nothing's happening. I guess this is where we're at. Yeah, I was a little surprised. I think I had that feeling on Wednesday, you know, talking to Jim Rutherford and just sort of getting a sense of, okay, what are they thinking around the edges? That they're not probably, they know where they're at. They know the price for a Gensel Gensel certainly was going to be big. You know, obviously seeing the Toffoli deal, a little surprised. Maybe they weren't able to find they don't have a ton of mid-tier prospects, but a mid-tier prospect that maybe makes it look a little better. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised nothing at all happened.
So you thought they should have beat the price on Toffoli?
Well, I don't know. I certainly he would make this team a lot better, right? Like, I think he adds a lot to this lineup.
Would you have given the 25 first-round pick for Tyler Toffoli?
Well, given the argument, I do buy the case that Alvin made. Which is why I asked him about Pettersson signing. And he said, yeah, he joked about an 8-year window. But if you really think about it, and I wrote about this on Friday afternoon, Pettersson signing locks in what's clearly a minimum 3-year window, because that's how much longer Quinn Hughes' contract goes for. You know what your core is. So you don't have to make moves now just to make moves, right? The team's playing well. You got to feel comfortable with your team. I think they're right to feel comfortable with their team. That doesn't mean they won't go forward. You know, they have decisions. They've got a mountain of free agents to deal with this summer. So in the end, I go back and forth because they couldn't exactly match what Winnipeg did, right? Like, they could do next year's second, but they don't really have a third. They have a third. You offer the Devils the other half of that conditional pick. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to add something else. So they don't and maybe in the end, the Devils just weren't interested. Maybe it was there. Maybe they did say, I don't know. I haven't really done any sniffing around on that, but that to me would have been what the question was. Are we willing to give up Kirill Kudryavtsev? Like, I don't know even who would qualify.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of, like I said, I get it. Like it is that challenge of all these guys. If you want to keep Hronek, if you want to keep Zadorov, you know, there's other decisions they're going to have to make. I know others have mentioned this before, but, you know, you're going to have to think hard, long and hard about Brock Besser and how you're aligning your money up and where it's all going to go.
You mentioned defenseman off the top. Without adding a defenseman, it means that if the Canucks go on a 2-3, certainly 3-round run in the playoffs or beyond, because we've seen the playoffs, it means we'll see Mark Friedman in the playoffs. Like that's just what this means.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
He's been all right. You know, I haven't had moments going, oh man, Friedman's in the lineup, but he's certainly the zip is, you know, there's less sizzle, as you would expect.
Yeah,
there's less sizzle. You get down to 8-9. You know, Matt Irwin's been up a couple times, I suppose. We'll see Matt Irwin. Maybe we'll see Christian Wolanin somehow. Jet Wu, maybe. But yeah, the barrel is pretty scraped. Scraped. Thank you. Gosh, I dug in this metaphor that I knew was going nowhere. Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty scraped. It's
pretty good barrel, though. I mean, like, it's not bad. You know, it's a nice oak, sturdy.
The barrel's nice. Yes, absolutely.
Smells nice. Well constructed. Nice,
yeah.
Good
strapping from the Highlands. Strapping from the Highlands of Scotland. No, it's a decent barrel. Tucker Pullman was once in that barrel.
Yep.
And you wrote about how he's the one screwing everything up right now, or his contract is the one screwing it all up. Patrick, explain.
Well, Farhan turned to me at some point. We were talking about this, and he goes, so let's think about this. You know, they came in, the cap was a mess. 2 years later, what's still there? And I said, well, technically Myers, because obviously the player has been playing well, but the price point is for a different player. But other than that, they've kind of uncorked the rest of that. So the last thing left is that Pullman deal, which in the end you would like him to be playing. He started the beginning of the last season in the lineup. And while we were in that press conference on Friday, Alvin kept talking about LTI, LTI, LTI. And the only reason they're now in LTI that they can't actually accrue any space is because they have this Tucker Pullman deal that just sits there and moves up and down depending on who's in the lineup, but is consistently over the cap and using the LTI cap exemption. And so I literally had the moment in my head. I sat there and, you know, they do the pass the mic around thing, and I'd done my questions and it kind of came up. I had the mic in my hand and I blanked and I couldn't remember what the heck I was going to ask. You know, so I handed it back and we were walking out. I was walking with the quads. We were coming back to the studio and it all of a sudden hit me. So I texted Alvin. He's not a big texter, but you never know. I said, listen, would you entertain a question based on something you said that I meant to ask but blanked? He said, what's the question? And I said, have you explored trading Pullman? And he went, yes. Because, yeah, you can get it. Like, you take that off the books and all of a sudden they're $1 million under the cap today, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Like, that's a lot of money they could be accruing. All of a sudden, they are using the cap to their advantage.
Well, the accruing part is huge for people to understand here, that every passing day, the cap space gets theoretically bigger, and you can't do that in LTIR.
It's a year-long budget, and if you spend less than your daily budget, that money, you can use it later. This is how the system works. I know people yell and scream about LTI and teams taking advantage of it, but you know what? Like, you should be using every avenue in front of you. One of them is simply not being at the cap. And a lot of teams haven't done that. But if the Canucks did find their way out of this, and I can see perhaps in the end why there are other teams that do not want to dance with them, because they can see the material advantage it would bring the Canucks to do so. You can get it. I mean, the Arizona is dumping ground. I mean, there is that theory out there that Arizona simply exists to deal with other people's cap problems. But I don't know. I haven't gone and looked into it. I'm not sure he would be, based on how I understand the NHL's insurance policy works. But conceivably, he could have an insured that contract could be insured, and then nobody's, you know, this the insurance company is paying for it. But
they've only got one retained contract right now. The Coyotes they've got two slots available.
Yeah, but they dumped all. I mean, in the end, what did they do on Friday? They just got rid of cash. That's all they care about, right? Like, it's an absolute joke of a team. The owner is. Who knows if the owner has the money, right? Like, they dumped contracts. It was all cash. They traded Troy Stetcher, didn't retain anything. They traded Matt Dumba, didn't retain anything. You know, they got rid of all these raw salary contracts.
Understanding of trading Pullman? Do you actually have to pay Pullman, or is it all on insurance anyway?
What I'm asking. So, from how I understand, I haven't asked. But from what I understand how the insurance policy works is that there's a not unreasonable chance that Pullman's contract isn't insured, because you can't insure every contract. Essentially what happens is your top players get insured, and then there's usually a few others you can ask about, and the insurer may go for it, but sometimes the insurer says no. And I don't know if they were, you know, insurer at this point will turn around and say, we'll give you a policy on that guy. They couldn't get one on Michael Ferland, for instance. Like, they did ask and the insurer said no.
Hey, good news with the Coyotes. There's the first NHL team selling their own streaming service. They debuted this a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure it is not just a last-minute cash grab by the owners to take your money on their way out the door.
Both subscribers say it is a great product.
Exactly. Two subscribers agree. Thumbs up.
Four out of the five.
Can I ask this follow-up by way of... I'm not disagreeing with you on Pullman, but I'm giving you another perspective to consider.
Sure.
As much as him being an LTR and keeping the Canucks in LTIR is not ideal, would it matter if Ilya Mikheyev was playing better hockey, or if Ilya Mikheyev in his 4.25 was at least tradable?
Absolutely. Now, I get a mild pass, because they probably, no one anticipates blowing out your knee in the beginning of the first year of your contract. But yeah, if Ilya Mikheyev, I mean, I think I said this to Jeff the other day. How did he score 10 goals? I mean, I will say, I think he's been a lot better the last week. He's been around the net, but at some point, and I think Tockett said it himself, at some point the puck's just going to hit him in the chest and go in the net. But he's been playing better, but he's paid to score, and he hasn't scored in 33 games, or what is it?
Feels like his stick blade is only about an inch and a half tall, so that like he can stick handle, but it jumps off his stick as readily. Like, it just, there's just nothing there.
Yeah, the wheels, there were moments. I'm starting to see bursts here and there, but there's not the straight ahead, straight line speed that he showed. That was like faster than Connor McDavid at one point.
Yeah.
Do you, we haven't seen that. Did you identify any buyer's remorse from Elvin on Friday? And do you think he would rather have, do you think he would rather have Gensel and Tanev as opposed to Zadorov and Lindholm?
I mean, I think they still like Zadorov a lot. The price they got, they paid for Zadorov was next to nothing. So, you know, even if he's not a perfect player, they're pretty happy with what he's been, certainly when he's been good.
Quite a performance on After Hours. I learned a lot.
Yeah,
past Saturday.
Big personality, and yeah, when he's playing in that role, I think he's. Yeah, the Gensel, did Lindholm, you know, cost you Gensel? I mean, I thought JD Burke laid it out well. Here's the alternative package, and you're probably giving up a fair bit for a player you're not sure you're going to be able to re-sign. And Gensel would have added a lot. Like, there's just absolutely no doubt. And you can tell that Alvin wished he lived in a different world where he'd been able to add him. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I mean, Lindholm, I thought was great on Saturday. That excuse me, that line with Putkolzin and Garland, like, there's something there. That's part of the story. Kenny Weeb was here from the Winnipeg Free Press, and he asked me after the game. He says, "That really how they play defensively?" I'm like, "This is what they've been building towards, and having a spine of centers that they now have." I mean, obviously, they traded for Lindholm to play with Pettersson. They thought that would be a thing. But now they're in a different world, which is perfectly fine. I think the lineup as constructed is pretty great. Absolutely. Would you like to have someone other than Ilya Mikheyev playing with Miller and Besser? Yes. Absolutely. But I just don't know. The Gensel price was a challenge for this team. They have to be, when you have a 3-year window and you don't know if the guy's going to resign, you don't know if you can afford him. You know, that's where sometimes you do want to stand still. My business buddy said, you know, I thought the Canucks actually did the right thing. They stood still. Sometimes you have to just be quiet and the bear won't smell you, you know, the bear won't hear you. Right. Like you don't have to do things just because other people are doing things. And there are undoubtedly going to be moves they can make coming. Now, if they don't do anything as an alternative, they bring in a player that, you know, you're not fighting against a little equivalent, but a player that does things that helps make your lineup better with the picks or the prospects you might have moved for Gensel, and you're able to keep that player and it is better for your cap, you know, then we'll be talking a different story, but they've got to do that first.
Before we leave Lindholm, who's been underwhelming offensively, does a lot of the little things that a coach wants.
Yeah.
Has he, first of all, did the Canucks ruin the relationship with the rumors, or did somebody ruin the relationship for the Canucks with the rumors? And secondarily, might all this play into the Canucks' hands that if they haven't had a sullied relationship with the possible trade to Boston, might Lindholm be not cheap, but pretty affordable in the offseason if they wanted to bring him back as a third line center?
Yeah. The thought occurred to me that, you know, like, I mean, I think he's going to go to free agency and see what's out there.
Sure.
The Canucks' task, obviously, now from here until whenever their season ends, is to show him what life is like here. And that is something that struck me when I talked to Rutherford, and, you know, he mentioned this to a few people. It was clearly a talking point they had. It was, listen, the guy's barely been here. You know, now they're home. His fiance and his young daughter are now here, or wife are now here. Like, his family's here. They get to see what living here is like. And that's certainly a thing that matters to players, that living in Vancouver is an enticing thing for the Canucks as a recruitment tool. So you probably know what you'd like to pay him in your heart of hearts, and you know what he probably wants to get. And
but he's not going to be the belle of the ball at this rate, right?
No, like, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But I think,
and yet his market is very stable, and very few. Yeah. Even a struggle for the rest of the year is not necessarily going to hurt it all that much, because top two centers are just almost never available in unrestricted free agency.
Yeah, he had 64 points last year. Like, he's having a struggle, difficult season here, but he had 64 points last year, and he didn't have either of those guys playing with him anymore. Like he has had a consistent, before this season, a really strong 5 years. Like, that doesn't disappear. It's not a guarantee he'll have another 5 years like that, but the last 5 years have been pretty good.
But he did a 20-point drop. He did a 20-point drop, and it could be another 20-point drop, you know, or 10 to 12-point drop at the very least.
The outlier is the 82-point season, absolutely, right? But you look at that player, like, there's a you know, 42 and 56 in the COVID season, 54 in the 70 in the season before the pandemic. You know, like, he's a guy that's in that 55, realistically 55 to 65-point range. Like, that's a pretty good – that's a second-line center, right? Like, that's a pretty good player. Even this year, like you said, he's on 39 points. There's I've lost track, 16, 17 games to go.
16, yeah.
10 more points. You know, that still gets him to 50. Like, that's under roughly where he's been, but that's still like, and that's playing, you know, on a not very good Flames team, and then playing right now third line minutes in Vancouver.
As long as he gets those 10 points.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. You're right. But like that, but that plays your point. If he doesn't, then people are going to be like, I'm not so sure about this. You know, he might not be looking at that long-term deal.
All right, let's get to Thatcher Demko. Ask you the Tim Hortons poll question. Have the Canucks leaned on Thatcher Demko too much this season?
Well, the thing that was interesting, I wanted to sit back and think about this because we talked about Casey DeSmith. The one I wanted to think about was the last month, last 6 weeks, which has been difficult, you know, since the All-Star game, before his relief appearance on Saturday, Casey DeSmith had played three times since the All-Star break, which to me is too much Demko lately. I don't think on the season as a whole, they leaned on him too heavy. There were, you know, DeSmith, especially early, was getting a lot of game time. I would argue that yes, they leaned on Demko too much given the rate of the last month, which is if this truly isn't a groin injury as is being suggested, and it's something else and it's not a big deal, we'll see. This is the blessing in disguise. Like, it was clear they needed to find a way to play him less, because what would you rather have, him playing his 60th game of the year in game one of the Stanley Cup finals or game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, or game 60 with like 3 weeks to go, right? Like, it's just that simple. And now they're going to be forced to rest him. And I think this is, it's not the way you want to do it, but it is going to be great benefit for this team.
Follow-up question. Do you feel well about them keeping first place in the division and conference with a combination of Casey DeSmith and Artur Silas, Nikita Tolopilo, whomever it may be over period?
I mean, I was taken by Jeff's point. I think it was yesterday they tweeted out, like, the Canucks go 500 and they basically win the division, because like Edmonton has to go with 16-4 or something. Like, it's like Edmonton's been playing really well. Don't get me wrong, but they also lost to Columbus and Buffalo the other day, right? Like that winning six, that is a huge percentage of games to win, no matter who you are. So the Canucks go 500. And there's a lot of reasons, no matter who the goalie is, that they'll go because of how they're playing. Like, I think they're going to be fine.
Rest of the conference championship, though, which, you know, second wild card might be handy.
Yeah, that's difficult. That was always going to be difficult, right? Mm-hmm. Like that. But, I mean, obviously there are incentives to finish first because you'll get the weaker of the two wild cards. But at the end of the day, if the question is, are they going to be okay down the stretch? And yes, I think they will be. As for the goalie, I mean, Nikita Tolopilo, I'm pretty sure has surpassed Artur Silovs on sort of the long view depth chart. At the moment, Silovs has played five NHL games, right? Or six NHL games. And he was fine last year. So I think they'll be comfortable bringing him up. He hasn't had a great year in Abbotsford. Tolopilo is the bigger story. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought Tolopilo up, but it just seems strange given that DeSmith is going to play the bulk of the games. Maybe Tolopilo gets a start. Maybe they do what they did last year. I mean, if you remember, they swapped out Silovs for Colin Delia at one point and just said, let's see what this kid's got. We're going to see that time. There are some matchups coming that you can spot a start in there.
Well, there's also some stakes this year that there weren't last year. So,
yeah.
Lastly, Carson Soucy,
19-3 and 2 with him in the lineup. And they're trying him on the right side now. Finally, we're seeing the lefty on the right side concoction that really, to get your best six in the playoffs, has to be a thing.
Yeah. Right? No, he's been it's an amazing story. You know, I asked him after the game on Saturday, are you truly the secret weapon? And he smiled, laughed, and you know he knows. Absolutely knows the stat. He said, I don't want to talk about the stats. I want to talk about my team. And to his credit, yeah. And then unfortunately, Rick Tocchet didn't really understand my question. I didn't really have a chance to follow up. I didn't worry about it too much. But I said, what does he bring? But he has been so steady in when he comes in, and we see it. Like I wrote about it in preseason. Everyone kind of talked about it. His ability to use his reach is a demonstration for all tall defensemen on learn how to do that, because that is a skill that most players don't have. If you can get your stick on the other guy on the puck, that makes things a lot harder, because they're further away from their sort of danger zone. And when you're carrying the puck, you think you have more space, more time. He gets his stick out on that puck, and all of a sudden you're having to make decisions in a spot you didn't think and you would have to. And that's clearly his advantage. I think that he has been so influential in that standpoint.
Puck on his stick, though, he's a good decision maker. I would say he's smarter than I gave him credit for.
Well, that was some of the knocks on him that, you know, like he had trouble exiting the zone, clearing the zone.
Yeah. I've been blown away at how good he's been with the puck. Like, he was a defenseman I certainly was very aware of because he played in Minnesota and then played in Seattle. And you knew he was a pain in the ass to play against. Like, big, tough, strong guy, made things hard. But the way he's moved the puck has been absolutely fantastic. Yeah, to the point where he kind of gets these very small, very soft seconds, to be honest, on the power play. But he's that third option right now on the power play. If they need someone else, when they had the 5-on-3 the other night and Hronek got bumped up to the 5-on-3, Susie was going to come out and run PP2. So, yeah, the guy's having a great season. You just, you know, cross your fingers and hope he doesn't get hurt again.
Magnificent stuff.
Always.
Good thing we waited.
Good start to the week, boys.
It's worth the wait.
He's like Matt Damon on Jimmy Kimmel, right?
I'm trying to avoid that scenario. Did you see the Oscars ended with that dog peeing on his star last night?
Oh, I didn't.
That was the final frame of the Oscars last night. Thanks, Matt Damon. We'll catch him next week.
Take care.
Harrison Price from All Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group.
Applewood Kia in Langley. The greatest deals on the Kias that you know and love, and the new ones that you've been curious about, like the EV6 and the Niro EV, finance at 4.99% up to 60 months. That's all at Applewood Kia in Surrey. It's all good at Applewood.
Tim Horton's poll question today: have the Canucks leaned on Thatcher Demko too much this season? Yes or no? You can vote at Sikerson Price on Twitter and YouTube. Speaking of Twitter, let's get to hashtags, the best and worst of Twitter.com. I'll lead us off, Blake, at AZ Sports. Arizona Coyotes Dylan Gunther and teammate Jack McBain had their water turned off this week after they did not pay their utility bill. Here's the thing, fellas. Adulting is hard, but you got to pay that water bill. To which an account at LeBron McLean tweets, you really love to see guys buy into their team culture like this.
That's very good.
Of course, it has to happen to Arizona Coyotes, right?
Yeah. Hey, I know a lot of 20-year-old men, which is what Dylan is, who forgot to pay utility bills back in the day.
What do you mean I have to file taxes?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
I can't just live in the world?
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah. These are the early days of independence.
What do you mean? I'm paying for cable now.
Doesn't my billet pay for? Yeah. Oh, that's right. No
billet. There's not groceries in the fridge unless I go do them.
Yeah, it's
pretty adulting. Stuff.
Good thing I'm not in my 20s anymore.
Oh, did you forget
did
a bill?
Did your water get turned off?
No.
No.
at Hall 1289, Dave Hall from Canucks Army. So the real question is, was John Hines aware of the rule or not? If so, get that man an extra large pair of sacks immediately. Dave Hall pointed out that when the Minnesota Wild pulled their goalie in overtime yesterday to extract the full 2 points against the Nashville Predators, they were risking getting no points. Now, the goal scorer had no idea, which is interesting. Now, the coach has been questioned about it, not in the immediate aftermath, but since. And he said, oh, yeah, we've been talking about this. But he seemed to intimate he knew, or he since found out and is trying to pass himself off as knowing. But the goal scorer, Matt, the most important thing is that the players on the ice know the rule, so they know to be a little bit conscientious defensively. In case you're missing the point here, folks, in overtime, in the National Hockey League, the sport that you watch so much of, if you pull the goalie just to create a power play, say, not for a delayed penalty, just because, if the other team scores, you don't get a single point out of that. You can't create a power play just for the sake of it in overtime. They're trying to dissuade you from doing that, lest what happened last night happen, which was they controlled the puck for a minute and a half and eventually did score the game-winning goal on an unsuspecting Predators team.
Yeah.
And now since then, Hines has pointed out, we can't just get a point out of that game.
No, understandably so. Now, that said, you were still just 1 point ahead of the Nashville Predators, which you would have been with a shootout win or an overtime win without pulling the goalie.
Yep.
So you didn't necessarily gain any ground on Nashville. You did on Vegas, sitting in the final playoff spot. I mean, again, presuming you didn't win the game regardless. Now six back of Vegas, the Golden Knights have a game in hand. So you inched a little closer to Vegas, but you're absolutely right at the risk of getting no points out of that game, which of course would have set you back after you had already earned the point. So you took points off the board, basically, to shoot for the extra one.
The question is, you know, how many more times are we going to see this out of the Minnesota Wild going forward? How many other high-risk moves does John Hines have up his sleeve for the long shot chance of getting back into it?
Pulling the goalie with 8 minutes left if he's down two.
Matt, completely possible. Completely possible.
At Woj ESPN, ESPN sources Indiana guard Benedict Mathurin will undergo season-ending surgery to repair a torn labrum in his right shoulder. Mathurin, the 2024 Rising Stars MVP, averages 14.5 points. He's expected to make a full recovery ahead of the 24-25 season. It not only affects the Pacers' playoff chase, but this is a Canadian who could have figured for Canada at the Paris Olympics, and you would think that he is no longer going to play the Paris Olympics coming off of major shoulder surgery.
Yeah,
so
it was
too bad for him.
I actually don't know much about the player at all, and I saw the news, and it sort of
really
got
good
me
player
to investigate it.
Yeah, I mean, he was he's sort of looking like a steal of last year's draft. Had a very nice career at the University of Arizona, which, needless to say, is a big basketball school, and has been a very good. He's typically been the sixth guy for Indiana off the bench and a scorer. So. Yeah, it's too bad he's not going to be able to play for Canada this summer.
Speaking of hoops, at K. Badenhausen, Kurt Badenhausen, news the NBA is considering launching a new standalone league or tournament in Europe. This is via Sportico. They hired Rain Group to explore European options. Any new identity would be done with FIBA. And the NBA hired a new head of Europe and Middle East as well. They've done this in Africa already. Created a separate league to give them more revenue, of course, but also just more overall brand recognition. And their point is that there's actually not a lot of NBA games shown in Europe because of the time differences and such. They don't bend over backwards to get NBA games on the television. It doesn't sound like this would be an NBA, like a super league. It doesn't sound like they'd steal the top clubs. It sounds like they just start a new league, which would totally piss off a lot of the domestic leagues, which within their own countries, Matt, as you know, are
are pretty popular. Like Spanish league, yeah, you know, like
no, for sure.
Those are popular in sports leagues.
Yugoslav republics, great basketball history, tradition there, and lots of Greece. I mean, there's a lot of European countries with good leagues. I almost feel like the NBA is just moving towards a minor league system. You know, these high picks would come in at 19, underdeveloped bodies, can't get on an NBA floor. Like, how much do they actually develop? Would you be better off just creating a minor league system with the G League, signing these guys, make it, you know, beyond what you have now, like, you know, something that's a little more robust and looks like baseball, changing the culture whereby when you take an underdeveloped 19-year-old seventh overall, you look at it much like, you know, hockey does and says, well, or baseball and says, well, you know, that guy's going to get his reps in the minor leagues and then, you know, we'll see about.
So it's also about money. They make $13 mm-hmm. billion dollars a year. The league does. They only get $300 million out of Europe. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, well, we can get over a billion there. Yeah. So they're aiming at that.
You know, because these governors, they need to upgrade from yachts to super yachts.
Well,
I'm not doing that on
mere yachts are a little embarrassing. Come on.
It's only $300 million in Europe. At Daily Faceoff, we talked about cap circumvention via the LTIR, and game one, as Louis tweeted last week, with regards to Mark Stone and his potential return with the Vegas Golden Knights. Well, we don't have to worry about that with Gabriel Landeskog in Colorado. The Avalanche captain won't return earlier than May, so it looks like he is going to miss the first-round series for Colorado on his way back. Hasn't played at all this year.
And did you see anything more on Stone? The more innuendo that I sort of was seeing on Stone is, I don't know that Stone's ready for game one.
Well, if the chatter gets loud enough, it might be game two, Blake. Or
I don't know.
Vegas may look at, you know, let's not tempt fate here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if they're in the final wild card spot, they're going to want all hands on deck. I think they're going to improve their lot in life. I still like Vegas to play in the 2-3 game and leapfrog the LA Kings.
Scottie Scheffler won the Arnold Palmer.
Did he ever? Going away.
At PGA Tour, this is why. Scottie Scheffler has made 9 straight one putts. This is the most in his career on tour. And then dovetailing into this one at Golf Digest, Scottie Scheffler was automatic from inside 15 feet. 16 of 16 inside 15 feet in the final round on the way to winning 5 shots. When you step over putts and hit all of them into the hole, that is a good recipe for success.
And, of course, his splits earlier this season were something unlike we've ever seen, like tee to green, the best player in the world by a mile, and then get on the green and be one of the worst players on tour. When he has putted well, he has been a dominant player. And, in fact, when he has putted well, maybe Brooks Koepka's best beats him, but I'm not sure there's a player out there who beats him routinely when he putts.
John Rahm at his top, well. I think, too.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. You know, but it's a very select group. I got to say, I was somewhat disappointed because for the first time really all season on the PGA Tour, you went into a Sunday round with a bunch of big names at the top of the leaderboard.
The course played tough, though.
You were hoping for a dramatic finish involving some of these big names, whether it was Matsuyama or Shane Lowry, Wyndham Clark. I mean, those are major champions, in some cases recent major champions. And yet the Bay Hill played so difficult for everybody not named Scottie Scheffler. I think there was only like 6 players who broke par.
Nick Taylor was one of them. Yeah. And he climbed 8 spots by shooting 71.
Yeah.
You know, like, crazy.
Lastly for me, at Talkin' Baseball, the Mariners traded Jared Kelnick to the Braves in December for pitching prospects Cole Phillips and Jackson Coar. Phillips had Tommy John surgery last month. Coar will get Tommy John surgery next week. They have signed Ryan Stanek, who's been a good relief pitcher with the Houston Astros, to patch the dam in that bullpen. They were counting on Coar there. And should mention something we didn't get to Friday, but the Blue Jays have Joey Votto, the Canadian first baseman, former NL MVP with the Cincinnati Reds, in camp as a non-roster invitee. He is absolutely tickled, talking about a childhood dream come true. We'll see if he can eke out one more year
with his hometown team, of course, the only Canadian major league team. He has been an extraordinary ambassador for his sport in this country. And that's hashtags for today. So Harrison Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group. You can text us 778-402-9680. And as we began telling you last week, save the date, April 20th, at the Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano, a special tribute to our late friend Jason Botchford. As we know, Jason made a significant impact on all our lives, and we wanted to honor his legacy the best way we knew how. Let's celebrate the return of the hockey playoffs to the city, first time in 9 years. Bro, do your playoffs, presented by Fountain Tire. Media event celebrating the life and legacy of Jason that will feature shared memories, special guests, exclusive performance from the matinee, and, of course, the celebration on the eve of the playoffs. They get going a couple days thereafter. Mm-hmm. This up-close personal event, April 20th, 12 to 5 p.m., proceeds supporting local mental health and addiction services. Stay tuned next week for ticketing information. We're going to get you some ticketing information, perhaps as early as this week, but by next week you'll be able to buy tickets with the proceeds going to the BC Mental Health Foundation. So looking forward to that. Okay. Vancouver Whitecaps FC.
Mm-hmm.
2-0 victory down in San Jose. Shout out interim head coach Mike D'Agostino. In for Vanni Sartini, who was, of course, suspended for the first 6 games of this season because of his protest and activities in that playoff game against LAFC in November. So they got a win and they got a draw under Coach D'Agostino. And I think you got to give him heaps of credit for this one, Blake Price. 2 substitutes score the goals. He comes with Alessandro Schopp, who scores the first one. And then Canadian international Ali Ahmed gets the insurance marker. Caps a tidy 2-0 victory en route to Dallas this Saturday before they come back home here to BC Place.
And Dallas just 1 win and 2 losses so far through 3 matches of their season as well. I mean, they're super subs. They're normal starters, obviously. And I looked at the starting 11 and I thought, oh boy, that's asking a lot of a couple of guys out there and leaning on guys like Luis Martins and stuff. You know, maybe that was the plan. They played 70 pretty moment-free minutes. They were catering to the road audience, if you will. But you don't care. It's not a home game for you. You don't get style points out on the road. You just get points. And a spectacular dash by Ahmed. The best strike of his entire Whitecaps career for Alessandro Schopp. I mean, he has been...
Yeah, you weren't very high on Schopp towards the end of last year, as I recall. You needed to see more out of him and thought there was more to give there.
Just a bit of a black hole offensively. There's been several times where he's in the box with the ball at his feet and nothing happens. And then that one, he wasn't really anywhere near goal and said, okay, I'm going to give it a ride. And I didn't even know he could, you know, make a hit like that. And there he goes. So that is a big, big win. And a +2 goal differential as well to boot. So, you know, I almost feel like if they can come out of the Vanni Sartini suspension at .500, they're okay. And right now, obviously, they're ahead of that game. We'll see how much longer they can do that. They've got one more road match, as we talked about, in Dallas. Then 4 straight at home, some of which will be with Vanni Sartini on the sideline. And we still, it's taken a while. There was some thought we'd hear news about the suspension being trimmed. We're only 2 matches in. I almost wonder in the next week if we just hear, okay, it's done.
You know, really?
Maybe after the 3rd match, maybe they just call it a day. I'm surprised that, you know, of the 6 matches, they couldn't get it trimmed down just a little bit. We'll see.
Alfonso Davies kicked in the face on the weekend for Bayern.
First start, too, since coming back from
injury.
Yeah.
Still suspect he will feature against Trinidad and Tobago for Canada. March 23rd, we're 12 days away from that match. A victory gets Canada into the expanded Copa tournament.
roster tomorrow announced.
So that's against the likes of Messi in Argentina and Brazil and all those South American heavyweights on top of the United States.
Yeah.
And El Tree. Football, NFL football, and CFL football. Ah, too bad. Mourn the passing. Join the BC Lions and the Canadian Football League community in mourning the passing of ex-Leos head coach Dave Ritchie, who passed away on the weekend at age 85. He's a Canadian Football Hall of Famer, class of 2022. Of course, was the head coach of the BC Lions in 94, which may still stand as the signature playoff run and victory of the franchise, beating Baltimore in the Grey Cup on their home turf, preventing the first American team from winning the Grey Cup. A sensational turnaround of that team. Eric Tillman, GM, Ritchie, the head coach. They went from 3-15 to Grey Cup champions in 2 years. He was also the defensive coordinator for the Lions in 06 when they won the Grey Cup. He is very close. In fact, I'm not sure Wally Bono has a better friend or had a better friend in football, and we certainly pass along our condolences to the Bono family alongside the Lions in mourning Dave's loss. He was also a head coach, coached some darn good teams in Montreal and Winnipeg as well. Wasn't able to get over the hump there, Grey Cup-wise, and a true character of the league and the sport as well. The ultimate teddy bear, grizzly bear. There were some times where he was so soft-spoken, had a huge heart, and then other times when he reared. But he was a staple of Canadian Football League sidelines for a decade and a half and will be missed. Football south of the border, Russell Wilson signs with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And the minute he was released, that was the popular name. Mm-hmm. And he did an interview with a couple of other teams as well, but it happens.
Now, I read that they're looking to trade Deontay Johnson. It may be a Steelers team that's being recast here a little bit. But, you know, as we said with Denver and Sean Payton, you know, so adamant to move on. Okay, you may not love his attitude. You may find him a celebrity quarterback. Maybe he was out of shape his first year in Denver. But here's the thing. How are you going to do better? And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers looked at it and went, Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett aren't better than this guy. This guy gives us a better chance to win Sunday in, Sunday out.
So I wonder if Mike Tomlin might be able to rein him in a little bit.
Well, and that's the other thing. There's a culture there in Pittsburgh because the head coach has been there for two decades. So,
and there's a culture of it's the shield. It's not you.
Oh, absolutely.
So
that is very much a shield team.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have as many Super Bowl rings as the Steelers have.
That brand means something.
Absolutely.
So you wonder.
And, you know, work ethic in Western Pennsylvania, that matters too. Also, Adam Schefter reporting that Bengals wide receiver T. Higgins, who was franchise tagged, has requested a trade. He's disappointed that there haven't been any long-term contract extension talks. He's ready to move on. See, you get under their skin because they realize they only have so many money-making years in this sport. And that franchise tag that delays them from going to free agency and delays them from making the big bucks can be a detriment and a curse. You feel as the team like, oh, we have this guy's services for one more year, but the player's in there going, what about my long-term future? Anyways, that's a massive, massive piece on the trade market if, in fact, Cincinnati grants his wish. All right. Poll question results from Friday. We asked you, are you disappointed the Canucks were so quiet at the deadline? 2,000 votes on this, Blake. Yes or no? What won the poll?
Yes.
No.
Really?
The late voting went no.
Mm.
I suspected this would happen.
To calm themselves.
People digest it and go, you know what? I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
No got 54% of the vote. Tyler, I can't believe they couldn't snag Toffoli at that price tag he went for. The Canucks really going to run McKayev and Suter in the top six and expect them to produce for a deep playoff run? Wes, no. We added Lafferty to Smith, Friedman, Zadorov, and Lindholm. He did it all early and gave the team time to gel. I personally didn't want Hogs or Pods and other prospects like Baines, Lekkomäki, Willander traded for a rental. Our team is already good. Ron says, disappointed, but they did get a big fish a while ago. Brittany, I was at first disappointed, then reasoned it out. Missing out on Toffoli does sting a little, but happy went to the Jets, if anyone. But glad management seems to have a bigger picture in mind. Kind of disappointed they didn't pull a Vegas on Tyler Myers to get Crosby, though. That would have been something. And David says, nope, made their moves before the deadline and didn't overpay for a rental player. That would have cost them picks or prospects. Time for this organization to build within the system. B, Trader Jim does his best work before the deadline. This is not news. We are being chased, not the ones being chased. I get that. But they were also chasing a top six forward and Jake Guentzel and weren't able to land him. Okay. Errors and omissions from Friday's show. So we were quickly handling the live news of the Vegas San Jose Thomas Hertl trade. And we had those two third round picks going to San Jose alongside the first round pick and prospect David Edstrom, a former first round pick.
That seems a little weird. It's
Vegas getting the two third round picks and Thomas.
I think they're the Hertl. Only draft
third
picks.
Round picks in 2025 and 2027.
I think they're the only draft picks the Vegas Golden Knights have for the next 17 years, though.
And the Sharks are retaining 17% on Thomas Hertl through the 29-30 season. And apparently Mike Greer is going to get another Stanley Cup ring if Vegas wins this year for all the help.
Yeah, it could be.
Anything from the inbox, Grady?
No, sir.
Thanks for listening, everybody. A reminder, subscribe to us, Canucks Conversation, Rinkwide Vancouver, wherever you get your podcast. Follow on social. That's Twitter, Insta, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. We are live on YouTube every morning, 11:30 a.m. Also live on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well. And last bit, please support those community sponsors you hear us talking about. Keep it local.